Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. According to a Gallup poll, 3 out of every 4 workers say their boss is their biggest source of workplace stress. That's a very high number. And chances are that even if you get on with your boss, you have at least one co-worker who makes your work life miserable. Come on, I know you do, because I've had many over the years. So should you leave? Should you stay? And if you do stay, how do you cope with these people who make it difficult for you to do your job? Peter Economy returns to Conversations Live with his new book, Wait, I'm Working With Who? The Essential Guide to Dealing with Difficult Coworkers, Annoying Managers, and Other Toxic Personalities. And I should point out that this book, although it's focused on workplace relationships, the strategies in here translate across any relationship from your boss, co-workers and employees to friends and family. And one of the reasons I really like Peter's work is he keeps it very simple. He tells it like it is, and he gives you case studies, examples and solutions. So let me tell you a little about Peter and bring him on. He is Peter Economy, known as the Leadership Guy at Inc.com, where he's published more than 1,500 articles. He works with C-level executives, executive coaches, and business consultants around the world. He's also the best-selling author of Managing for Dummies and Wait, I'm the Boss. Here's my guest, Peter Economy, with his new book, Wait, I'm Working With Who? Peter Economy, welcome, welcome.
Thanks so much. Great to be here, Vicki.
I should say welcome back, because last time we talked, it was about your other book, Wait, I'm the Boss. Today, we're looking at your new book, Wait, I'm Working With Who? And this is a guide to dealing with difficult coworkers, annoying managers, and other toxic personalities. Something we've all had to deal with at some point in our lives. So I want to begin by sharing some statistics that you share. 3 out of 4 employees say dealing with the boss is the worst, most stressful part of their job. 2/3 say they would take a new boss over a pay rise. That speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. And it just goes to show that so many of us have got bad bosses. When I wrote that first book, Wait, I'm the Boss, that just came through loud and clear that unfortunately there's a lot of bad bosses out there.
So is that what prompted you to write this book, I'm presuming, right?
Yeah, it was. It kind of opened up a whole new avenue to me because, it's more than just bosses who are toxic at work. And I think, as you said, Vicki, we've all experienced toxic people in the workplace, whether they're our boss, a coworker, customers. I used to work at Jack in the Box, a drive-thru at Jack in the Box, and we'd have people come through the drive-thru throwing milkshakes at us and all kinds of things. So even your customers can be toxic sometimes.
Do you know, I think, as an aside here, I think everybody, before they enter the workforce, should go into retail, because it teaches you what some people really have to go through, because retail is one of the hardest, I think. I've worked with very high-end cosmetic brand as a promoter, and trust me, that even though it was high-end and we were dealing with, people had a lot of money, it did not stop them throwing milkshakes at the counter.
No, I think sometimes the people with a lot of money act worse sometimes, so yeah. Not sure why that is.
Right, so back to the book, Wait, I'm Working With Who? You've put this into 2 parts. Part one, you identify 16 specific jerks, although you acknowledge there are more out there, but these are the generalities that we run into the most. And part two is you provide 8 strategies for dealing with those jerks. So I'd like to look at part one, the jerks we're working with. And you identify some typical bad behaviors. So just loosely, would you talk about some of those bad behaviors that prompted this book?
Right. So, again, we've all got people in our lives at work and in our personal lives, too, that we run into that, you know, are toxic. And, for example, I think the first one that I list in this, you know, 16 most common jerks at work is a pessimist. And we all know pessimists. I mean, we all know that person who's, their glass isn't just half empty. It might be completely empty. They're always looking at the bad side of things. You know, they're always saying, oh, you know, this is such a terrible place. We'll never get ahead. I'll never get ahead in my job. Our company will never amount to anything. You know, all those kinds of things. And what they do is they bring down the entire place. They bring down the team. They bring down their coworkers. And ultimately, they suck the energy out of the organization.
Yeah, some of those, I mean, I've worked with many of those, and I'm thinking of one boss in particular. You would suggest something, you know, we'd have this brainstorming meeting to come up with new ideas, and she'd go, yeah, but we don't do it that way. Or,
or yeah, and I've had this in my own, you know, back when I used to work in a regular workplace and not for myself, where our manager would invite us to make suggestions. You know, he would say, well, I want to hear your suggestions. I want to hear what you want to, you know, what kinds of things you might offer to make our procedures better, make our organization better. And so we'd make those suggestions during the course of our staff meetings, and he'd copy them down and then promptly file them away, and we'd never hear from them again. So they were just being filed away and never acted on.
File 13, we used to call that when I was in banking.
Exactly. File 13, I know that file.
And so along with the pessimist, this same boss of mine, she was a nitpicker. You would not believe how she would nitpick. You could do a thousand things right, and she'd find one little flaw somewhere. And so it got to a point that whenever I knew she was coming, I would tell my assistant, take all of your business cards and put them in your drawer. They were on her desk, right? And she'd say, why? And I'd say, because your desk is the first that she sees when she comes in. She finds something wrong there. It's going to be your business card is empty. Your business card holder is empty.
Right.
And then we can go on and enjoy the rest of the visit.
Wow. Yeah. And that's the trouble. I think that some bosses, you know, and some coworkers, everybody you work with, tend to try to find things you're doing wrong. Instead of catching you doing something right, they're trying to catch you doing something wrong.
Mm.
And that's just a form of toxic behavior that, again, I mean, it makes people run away. I mean, you'll try to avoid that person if you can. You'll see them coming down the hallway, and you'll say, I think I'll make a turn here and go somewhere else and not have to deal with that person.
Yeah. I think one of the most annoying, well, they're all annoying, actually, the ones that you've listed. But I think one of the most annoying is the one who is constantly a credit thief, as you call them. They take credit for everybody else's work.
Yeah, and that's the case for coworkers and for bosses. I mean, I know I've been in again, staff meetings or meetings with our upper management where my boss would say, oh, and we raised sales, you know, 15% this last quarter. And do they mention that the person who raised, you know, caused those sales to be raised was me? No.
Mm-hmm.
They would just take all the credit for themselves and shine the spotlight on themselves instead of pointing out that other people on the team actually got something done.
Yeah, and that kind of goes along with the narcissist too. Who, I mean, they kind of do everything that's annoying. But you share case studies in the book of various stories and personalities and the situations here. But, you know, one of the things you put under the narcissist personality type is that they run hot and cold. And I can remember a large project that I worked on a few years back where that happened every day. Like one day, the person who was I was working with was very professional and on the ball and pushing forward, and this is what we're going to accomplish. And then the next day, she couldn't care less. She just was like,
right.
Oh, I don't care. Yeah. This isn't rocket science. So it's very difficult to deal with somebody like that, especially when they're the client or they're your boss.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's interesting because I think any of these can be hot and cold. And that kind of, I don't know if it fools people or I mean, sometimes it does fool because, you know, so let's say that someone is being abusive in the workplace with you. And so you go running to your boss and say, you know, this person's being abusive to me or to my customers or coworkers. And then all of a sudden they're on their best behavior. So, you know, the boss will go to them, they'll say, you know, what's going on here? And they'll be on their best behavior. And so it finally, you know, kind of smooths over, but then they're back on their bad behavior again before you know it. So they're really good at that. They're really good at that hot and cold thing, at being on their best behavior whenever they need to be.
Yeah. And then, of course, you've got the competitor, which, again, can come from peers. You know, they want to one-up you all the time. And
right.
The backstabber. I mean, yeah, I was on this project about 5 years ago. It was a project down in L.A. And because I'm up here in Seattle, so it's
right.
All phone work, all conference calls. And I just could not deliver to my satisfaction this project, this communications project. And I suddenly realized it's because none of these people down in LA like each other. They're all trying to outsmart each other and outtalk each other. And when I had a meeting with the chief person down there, she said, "Don't feel bad," she said, "because they don't listen to me." And so I spent weeks on this project. I finally deliver it. And then the communications director, who would not talk to me or acknowledge anything I sent over, he'd just say, "Yeah, do whatever you want, do whatever you want, do what they want." I finally make the presentation to the whole team, you know, very dysfunctional, as I said. It's a mix of marketing, engineers, and financial people. And then he presents what we're going to do.
Right.
Which was, I was totally blindsided. I put the phone down. I'm dumbfounded. I can't even move from my phone. I'm just like sitting there like, what the heck just happened? The phone rings and it's him and he's laughing. And he's like, "Thanks for being such a good sport."
That's just crazy. It sounded like he ought to just fire the whole lot of them and start from scratch, I think.
Really? So how do we deal with somebody like that how do we identify a backstabber, I think? Because I hear this from a lot of people that they're blindsided.
Yeah, well, I think we hear about backstabbers, you know, either through personal experience, certainly we've experienced it, and I've experienced it, and unfortunately, sometimes it's when you least expect it. So here you are, you just made a presentation to, say, the management team or something like that, and then you find out later that backstabber is talking behind your back about how their idea is way better than what you just presented. Or how, you know, what you just did wasn't that great. So, unfortunately, sometimes we don't hear about it until you get kind of a back-channel communication from somebody else. We may not even realize it until it's brought to our attention some other way. Or from a coworker who's experienced the backstabber themselves. You know, you may talk to someone you work with and find out that they've been stabbed by this person, you know, backstabbed by this person. And then you talk to other coworkers and they have been as well. So, you know, they can be pretty stealthy. They can kind of work behind the scenes and not be that overt about it. Just kind of hide their practices until you get stabbed and you find out about it.
Mm-hmm. So let's look at some strategies for dealing with jerks. And, you know, you did identify 16 in the book. We talked about a handful of them. You say jerks always want a reaction from you. And this is so true. You have to learn not to react. But, you know, I think that often comes with time and experience. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I know that it's an interesting story that I had where I had just started working for a new company. I had moved all the way from Washington, D.C., where I had worked for maybe 4 or 5 years, taken a position here in San Diego, and, you know, just started working at this company. And there was a person who was at this company who I was all of a sudden in competition with. And I didn't realize it, that I was in competition with this person, but I was. And, you know, slowly but surely it became clear to me that we were going to have a problem.
Mm.
And, you know, all of a sudden she became very toxic with me. And And it took me a while to realize that. In fact, I didn't understand how to deal with it until one of the managers, one of the executives in the company, took me aside and said, you know, during these meetings, these staff meetings, you need to not take her bait. You know, you need to, you know, not get caught up in their essentially trolling me.
Yeah.
And just to step back and not take the bait. Don't react. And it was really something I didn't realize that I was doing. I didn't realize that I was, you know, being trolled by this person, that I was being baited. And then I was reacting just naturally, and I didn't realize the impact of that until my boss pointed it out. So,
Yeah, it's been my experience that often those kind of people come to you in a very kind of conspiratorial way. I want to just give you a heads up because they're looking for that reaction. And it's like, I always like have to take a moment, step back and think, well, you know, what's their agenda here?
But and they're usually really good at it. They're usually, they've got really a lot of practice under their belt.
Yeah.
And they know what buttons to push. They've become very, very good at pushing buttons, people's buttons. And some people's buttons are pushed easier than others. My button was pushed very easily, as it turned out.
Right. But, you know, that I do think is something that comes with time and experience. And, you know, one of the things you talk about frequently through the book is, you know, we have to step back. We have to check in with ourselves often to see why we're feeling a certain way, why we feel on edge around a certain person, why that person annoys me so much, why my hair stands on end when I hear that person's voice at the end of the corridor. So I think that's an important point that you make throughout the book there. Number two in the strategy category is, you know, just refuse to play the game. So we have to realize we're playing that game, which we've just kind of addressed here. So then, you know, when you're in a situation, it's sometimes hard to just say, I'm not going to discuss that or whatever, without becoming across as belligerent or as aloof or, you know, not being a team player. How do you handle that?
Yeah, well, I think it's a one-on-one conversation with that person who's you know, trying to play their game on you. And you just tell them, I'm not going to play the game. I'm not going to go there with you. You know, if you're going to go down that road, if you're going to, you know, talk about this, if you're going to try to draw me into your game of maybe complaining about something, you know, I've seen that a lot where someone will be a complainer, and they'll want me to be the complainer as well. In fact, they'll want me to champion their complaint.
Mm.
And I, you know, it's sort of like, you know what, I'm not going to champion your complaint. I'm not going to do that for you. If you've got a complaint, you go out there and do that all you want, but I'm not going to be a part of it. So, I mean, I think it's a one-on-one thing where you just have to tell them one-on-one, I'm just not going to do that.
Yeah, okay. And then give us some tips about the best way to neutralize conflict. And obviously this is going to depend on who we're dealing with and what kind of situation we're in. But what are some of the best tips to try and neutralize conflict as soon as possible?
Yeah, well, first of all, you've got to, you know, look at it objectively. What's really going on in this conflict? You know, what is creating the conflict? Is it something? Is there an interpersonal problem that you've got with this person? Or do they like you, not like you? Are they trying to get something, you know, over you? Are they trying to get ahead of you? Are they trying to be in competition and come out ahead? You've really got to kind of do a quick assessment, kind of a triage of what exactly is creating the conflict, and then look at the emotions that are being a part of this. And look at your own emotions. You know, how is this person making me feel? How am I reacting to them? What am I doing to try to diffuse the situation? And then, you know, get at their underlying needs. What does this person need? What are they trying to accomplish? What is it that's driving them into this conflict? And then sometimes you might have to actually, you know, talk to your coworkers. You know, are they having the same kinds of issues with this person? Are they also in conflict with this person? And then just try to resolve it. You know, if this is a common thing with all of your coworkers, if they've got the same kind of conflict with this person, then you've almost got to do an intervention, I think, with this person and get them aside and say, say, you know, this is just not working. I mean, I've got all my coworkers and me are having this problem with you. Why? What is the problem? You know, my general policy is not to try to, you know, not to run to your boss every time you've got a problem. I think that's kind of a cop-out. I think it's better if you try to resolve these things yourself or with your team. So I would generally say, you know, to resolve conflict, either do it, again, one-on-one, personally, interpersonally, or involve your team. You know, bring the team and do, sort, you know, again, sort of an intervention.
Yeah.
And try to resolve it on a wider basis. But I try to avoid just saying, you know, putting it in the hands of your boss and say, hey, boss, would you please solve this for me?
Right, definitely. So for folks who are in a flattened hierarchy where everyone is perceived to be on the same level, I think that's particularly important to get the rest of the team involved.
Right.
Because there's nowhere else to go, really.
Yeah, and chances are they're having problems with this person too. You know, usually when someone is a toxic individual, they're not usually just focused on one person in the organization. Usually they spread the wealth.
Right.
They spread their toxicity around, and they kind of enjoy that to some degree. You know, the more buttons they push, the more people they get to react, the better they feel, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's usually problems throughout the team with this person. So yeah, involve the team.
Another of your strategies, see something, say something. And you talk about not rewarding bad behavior. And that's something I had to learn as a very young manager, because we often get manipulated into situations as well. And, you know, we've got these people trying to play games and trying to out-compete each other. And so that lesson in learning not to reward bad behavior, I think that's essential in life, period. With kids, with dogs, with everybody.
Yeah, you get what you reward. I mean, I've got my friend Bob Nelson, who wrote a book called 1001 Ways to Reward Employees. And the central thesis of that book was you get what you reward. Mm. And as long as you continue to reward bad behavior, toxic behavior, then you're going to keep getting it. I've got a cat right now. It's my wife's cat, actually, but we share it. Every hour on the hour, this cat walks into my office, starts meowing, and then if I don't pet it right then and there, it's going to continue to meow until I do. And so she's got me trained now to go pet the cat every time it starts meowing. And every hour on the hour, I can bank on it. So I'm rewarding that cat for that behavior. So same thing happens with people.
Absolutely. Number seven in the eight strategies is don't be a jerk yourself, because sometimes we can be the problem, or we can certainly be contributing to the problem. So, you know, other than ask for like 360 peer review, what tips do you give people about making sure you're not being the jerk?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, 360 peer review is certainly part of it, but we are often blind to our behavior. We're often blind to what goes on around us. So I think that you have to look for the warning signs. You have to be very alert to how people are acting around you. You know, are people trying to, I mean, as you walk down the hall, and obviously now that we're in this kind of hybrid workplace where sometimes we're working at home, sometimes we're working in the office, but if people are avoiding you, if you're walking down the hallway and you see people kind of jump down and turn around and go some different direction, or if you have turnover in your department where people are leaving your department and you're not sure why, mm-hmm. you know, why can't you keep employees? Why can't you keep your good employees? Why are they always trying to jump ship and go somewhere else? You have to ask yourself, you know, why is that? Why are people acting these ways around me? And you should reach out and get feedback from people. And when you get that feedback, you should take it seriously and really listen to it. You shouldn't just poo-poo it and say, oh, they don't know what they're talking about. I'm awesome. I'm great.
Right.
When maybe you're not being so great yourself.
Right. You share some thoughts on procrastination, which I think is that we're in a pandemic, and I think that's at epidemic levels right now, maybe pandemic levels. You know, many people have struggled with that, and things that we should do, we put off. What works for you, Peter? You've obviously, you know, been working away at your book and other stuff. So what's worked for you and helped get you through?
Yeah. Well, my work is very deadline driven naturally, because I'm a book writer, I'm an author and writer, and I tend to have deadlines on contracts. So my contracts will say such and such is due at such and such date, and if I don't perform, then I don't get paid. So I've got a very direct relationship to schedules. But even so, I mean, it'd be easy for me to just sort of, you know, wait till the last minute and try to do it all at the last minute. So I just make a point of setting up schedules for myself where, let's say I've got a book that's due 3 months from now. You know, every couple of weeks I'll create a chapter. I'll have a schedule where I've got one chapter is due 2 weeks from now, another chapter is due 2 more weeks from now. I set up schedules all the time and have to-do lists. You know, I'm constantly working off of to-do lists. My most important priorities are on my to-do list. And I always refer to that. Every evening before I go to bed, I'll update my to-do list for the next day and make sure that I work that to-do list. That's my sort of my guide to what I do. I'm very religious about making sure that I follow my to-do list.
Right, right. You know, bottom line, it doesn't matter how much we learn, how much we try to accommodate some people in some situations, it may just be time for us to move on and find somewhere else where we're a better fit. It's a better fit for us. So at what point do we say it's enough?
Yeah, I think you don't want to do it too soon, too quickly, because you may be able to change your situation. But at some point, when you feel like you're getting unhealthy, when it's become unhealthy, could be physically unhealthy, could be mentally unhealthy, a lot of the reason why people leave their jobs is because they're in a toxic environment. And, I mean, that's just it's a bad thing. So once you start suffering mentally, physically, because of it, you start avoiding work. You start saying, I think I'll just call in sick today because I just don't want to deal with this anymore. When you start looking at the want ads, you know, when you're on LinkedIn looking for job opportunities, you know, I think that's a sign. So, yeah, at some point, you've got to bail out. You just can't stick around. If something's not going to change, if you can tell it's just not going to change, then you've got to look for something else.
Yeah, and I think if you get to Sunday evening and you've got a pit in the bottom of your stomach, it's like, hello, time to go.
Yeah.
I know that's
one.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's
when
I
definitely
changed my career, actually. So you have a blog. I wanted to just point this out. You have a column, that you've written called 5 Things Yale Experts Say We Should Have on Our Resume to Get Our Next Job, for anyone who's had enough and wants to move on there. And one of the things on there is quantified results. It's one of the things that I probably see the least of on resumes over the years. So could you explain why it's important to put quantified results on your resume and what that should look like?
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I think many of us, you know, we know we're great employees. We know we get along with people, and all these kind of qualitative kind of things. We're nice. We're easy to get along with. We do good work. But to really, if you're going to sharpen up your resume, if you're going to sharpen up what you do, and try to impress someone in your next job, you know, when you're applying for a job, and then when you do your interviews, you've got to quantify what you do. And that's just a common thing. So what have you done that's actually quantifiable? Did you land 5 new clients every quarter? Did you raise sales by 25% over the course of the year? Did you, anything you can quantify, you should try to quantify in your job. And this could be anything, but anything that's quantifiable. That's so important, because it really shows that you did something specific.
Yeah.
And people that are looking to hire someone want specific results.
Right, right. Well, as always, Peter, great, great information. The book is called Wait, I'm Working With Who? The Essential Guide to Dealing with Difficult Coworkers, Annoying Managers, and Other Toxic Personalities. And I know listeners can find out much more about you and your work at petereconomy.com. So final thought you'd like to leave listeners with today?
I think that, more than ever, we've got to be human. as a manager, as coworkers, we've really got to bring out our humanity and think about other people and think about their feelings, think about them as people instead of just numbers or something, you know, like that. I would just say be more human.
Yeah, I think that's right on, especially given the amount of Zoom meetings we're having these days.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I want to leave people with a quote you have at the back of the book, and it's from Charlie Chaplin. It isn't the ups and downs that make life difficult, it's the jerks.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
I just love that.
Thank you, Vicky. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And listeners can find out much more about us at conversationslive.net. We'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicky's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.